back Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, that's 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line, well, we hope we're going to have with us on the line, Mr. Brian Tracy, who's written a book entitled Something for Nothing. That's Something for Nothing, and I just have to check here and see if we have the right telephone number for him, and it looks like we do, and don't know why we... don't have them on the line. Well, anyway, we may do another open lines, and if we do, why, we'll look forward to hearing from you here at Radio Liberty. Well, at the end of the last hour, while we can get back to what we were talking about during the last hour, we were talking about this whole idea that it's all right to spy on the Americans as long as we are, of course, using this to protect America from Al-Qaeda. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Al-Qaeda is not a major threat to the United States. If it were a major threat to the United States, we would be trying to catch Osama bin Laden. Why have we never caught Osama bin Laden? If Al-Qaeda were really a threat to the United States, why is it that we have not sealed our southern border? And you know that at the present time, men are coming across that border. Significant numbers of them are there, Muslims from countries that support terrorism. And when they are apprehended, why they are, of course, brought in, they look at their names if they're not on the known terrorist list. They're given a slip and told to return in a month for a deportation hearing, and they never come back. Now, why would you do anything that stupid unintentionally? And when the Border Patrol agents, of course, complain about this, why they're told, well, you know, we can't profile people. I mean, that's just... I mean, here we are in the middle of a war for our very survival, and we can't profile people coming into our country from Muslims who come into the country from countries that support terrorism. Come on now. If we really are involved in a war on terrorism, we have 15,000 chemical plants here in the United States, and none of them have adequate actually protection. They're not adequately guarded, and this is what the 9/11 Commission has said. We have many, many nuclear power plants. None of them are adequately guarded. There are treatments for radiation sickness. You know, if you're exposed to radiation, you don't die right away. You die later on because of internal hemorrhage. And there are effective treatments for that. And the government refuses to buy them or to help finance their production. The Pentagon thinks they're great, but the Office of Homeland Security is wasting their money on all sorts of foolish things instead of buying things to protect the American people in case of a nuclear attack. And I really think there's going to be a nuclear attack. I think we're moving into World War III. So why does the Office of Homeland Security refuse to finance the production? The company has already spent over $100 million to develop the product and faces bankruptcy because the government told them to produce it and they would buy it, and they're only going to buy 100,000 copies. You can get actually this off of CBS. It was 2 weeks ago, you can go up there, and I think they call it immune something or other. And when they interviewed the fellow from the Office of Homeland Security and said, why are you only buying 100,000 doses of this? He said, well, we have to take one step at a time. And the people from 60 Minutes are saying, what happens if there's an attack on New York? And there are millions of people who are ill and are going to die, and you don't have the medicine. I mean, how are you going to justify it? And the reply was, well, we take one step at a time. So if there was really a war on terrorism, they would be stockpiling the things that are necessary to protect us from the consequences of a nuclear attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Certainly, over today, we're supposed to have had a guest, Mr. Brian Tracy, but he doesn't seem to have shown up. So right at the present time, we're going to be talking open lines, and if you can give us a call of 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, we'd love to talk to you. But right now, we're talking really about the war on terrorism. And we're told we're involved in a war on terrorism. And if that's really true, as I pointed out, why haven't we tried to capture Osama bin Laden? I mean, it's been 4 years, supposedly, we went to war to capture Osama bin Laden, who was behind the 9/11 attack. And we sent our troops into Afghanistan, and then we refused to allow our special forces troops to try to capture him. If you'd like to get the background on that, we have a book called Crude Politics. It's written by a gentleman who talked to the special forces when they came back. Incidentally, at least according to the author, the publishers refused to circulate the book and try to get it out, saying, well, my wife didn't like the book. But the real substance of this book is the special forces were not allowed to go after Osama bin Laden, and so Osama bin Laden escaped. And in 4 years, we've not been able to apprehend him. Do you honestly believe that when we have satellites that can read a newspaper, read a license plate from outer space, we couldn't find Osama bin Laden? With a $25 million price on his head, nobody would turn him in. If you believe that, you believe anything. In fact, if you read Kurt Weldon's book, and Kurt Weldon is a congressman who heads one of the committees that deals with counterterrorism, Kurt Weldon actually knew exactly where Osama bin Laden was. He was living in Iran, and of course, the government knew where he was, and they refused to get him, so Kurt Weldon was going to go in to Iran on a special mission, take with him an aide who was really a professional assassin, leave him behind, and he was going to take out Osama bin Laden. And when Kurt Weldon, Congressman Weldon, told George Tenet, who headed the CIA, what he had in mind, George Tenet told Kurt Weldon, Congressman, you should not be involved in this sort of thing. Why? Because the last thing the CIA wants would be, of course, to do in Osama bin Laden. He is the enemy. He is the enemy. We have to show his picture up on the screen all the time to make us really believe we're involved in a war on terrorism. But, of course, if this was really true. Don't you think that with all the intelligence gathering facilities we have and satellites that can watch you and see if you've added on to your house, can tell what plants are growing in your fields, we couldn't find Osama bin Laden? You've got to be incredibly naive to believe that. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest, is not here. So if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We're talking about, are we really involved in a war on terrorism? Does that mean that the government has the right to violate the laws of this country and spy on people without a warrant? It's very easy to get a warrant. In fact, the government, the special courts almost never turn down the request for warrants, and they don't have to have them ahead of time. They have 72 hours after they've started spying on people to get that. But you see, they don't want to get a warrant because they're not spying in many instances on terrorists. They're spying on law-abiding citizens that they do not like James Bovard, who's written a couple of books. One was Pretext for War, and the other is a book that we actually have carried here and we still have available, going into the background of the special operation that they had, where they were trying to incite an attack on Cuba back in 1962. So let's go to Chris calling us from Kentucky here and get his thoughts. But I would like to suggest the war on terrorism is really a war on the American citizens. If we were really concerned about terrorism, why are we giving $600 million a year to Pakistan? And you can go up and find what I'm saying. And Pakistan has 20,000 madras schools, the vast majority of which are teaching young Islamic boys all about radical form of Islam and indoctrinating them in radical Islam. And then, of course, we also are giving the money to Pakistan. They have 55 terrorist training camps where they're actually training young people to be terrorists. So if we're really involved in that war on terrorism, why are we financing the people who are financing the training of terrorism and radical Islam? or maybe nothing is as it appears to be. Well, let's go to Chris, who's calling us from Kentucky. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. You're so right on the subject of this war on terror. What is a war on terror? There's more and more newscasts are saying how good this surveillance program is, and now they're saying one, Cheney and all the other administrations saying, well, we're not spying on Americans. We're just spying on the terrorists that are trying to invade us. And I don't believe a word of this. And there's so much of this conditioning out here, and it's getting a lot worse. Our liberties are going.
And our job is to get people to think, and that's what I do, and I hope that you're doing the same thing, and that you're getting the material out of our letters, newsletters, and of course you're bringing that out. The fact that Iraq had offered to surrender before we invaded, and we wouldn't accept that. That's our latest newsletter. If you want the documentation, we'll be glad to send it to you. Saddam Hussein had agreed to leave Iraq and go into exile with his family, and arrangements were made to block that. Because after all, if they were willing to surrender and Saddam is willing to leave, how could we have justified the war? And this is only the second step. The next is going to be the attack on Iran. Hey, our guest is here. Thanks so much for calling, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And we've got Mr. Tracy on the line. Thank you very much for being with us.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. And we're going to be talking, of course, as you know, about your book, Something for Nothing. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you happened to write the book.
Well, thank you. I didn't graduate from high school. I worked as a dishwasher and a whole bunch of other things. And I traveled all over the world. I went and worked my way around the world on a ship and various things and began asking the question, why is it that some people are more successful than others? And then eventually, why are some countries more successful? And I began to study psychology, philosophy, business, economics, metaphysics, history, so on. And I finally came to a very simple conclusion, is that human beings are expedient, is they seek the things that they want the fastest and easiest way possible right now with little concern for the secondary consequences. And that has been true for 100,000 years of human behavior. And it's all, the only problem comes is when we expect people to act other than expediently. And so the very most, for the very least, is something for nothing. So what we have today in America and worldwide is a desire to get something for nothing, or what I call in my book, free money. And I say the idea of free money actually drives people crazy. In a very simple method, just walk onto a busy business plaza, take $101 bills out of your pocket, throw them in the air, and you'll see a whole bunch of normal people suddenly go crazy, scrambling, punching, kicking, screaming, to get the free money.
Well, of course,
free money drives people crazy.
We see this all the time on television, you know, when they talk about somebody winning the big spin or winning this or that or the other prize. And, just this emotional thing. These people have won. They've won the big spin. Look at all the money they're going to get.
Well, and of course, the gambling craze, the lottery craze, the tort lawyer craze is out of control. The politicians in Washington, criminals, drug addicts, smugglers, virtually every war in history has been a war of plunder. The very first thing that Saddam Hussein did when he went into Kuwait is he plundered the entire country, stole everything. And they say, well, you know, there's principles. No, it's always something for nothing. And so we say, well, what is the solution? Well, the solution is, first of all, to accept that everybody wants what they want the fastest and easiest way possible right now. And the only question is, how do you get the things you want? And what my book lays out is that prosperous societies are societies where people accept this. And the founding fathers, by the way, accepted human nature as it was without questioning that it could be different. And they set it up in such a way that the only way you could get the things you wanted was by doing something of value, by running a radio show that people listen to and that people enjoy and that people will advertise on, or about making a product or service. So you find that the most prosperous of all societies are societies where the great majority of people who want to get the things they want the fastest and easiest way possible have to produce something of value that benefits other people.
And, of course, you talk about this thievery gene. What's that all about?
Well, you've heard of a recessive gene that comes to the surface under certain conditions. Well, I think everybody under the surface has a thievery gene. They have a natural tendency. That's why if you ask a person a question, you know, would you steal? They say no. Or would you steal if you could get away with it? Then they say, well, how much? And it's always there. You know, if it's $1 million and I could get away with it. Now, not all people are like this, but the majority are. Is that the majority of people, it's almost like breathing, is they just cannot resist something for nothing.
But you know, at one time, when I was very young, this whole idea of hard work and getting ahead, the Horatio Alger story was, Horatio Alger didn't get something for nothing. He worked hard, he got ahead. How did we lose our vision as a country?
Well, the good news is that about 95% of Americans are pretty good. I've traveled all over the world. Americans are honest, they're hardworking, they're good family people. They work for a living, they obey the law, they pay their taxes, they drive on the right side of the road. All of our problems are 5% or less of the population. And this, by the way, has been true throughout history. Most people recognize that the very best way that they can enjoy the kind of life they want is by working cooperatively, harmoniously with other people. We call it the free enterprise or free market system. Is people can get the things they want faster and easier by cooperating and working in harmony and earning the support of other people and making a contribution to their work and telling the truth and building a reputation and borrowing money and buying a house. In other words, trust, honesty, integrity, character are the fastest ways in the long term to be successful. But there's always those 5%. There's always a small number of people who, unfortunately, because the majority of people are honest, these people can wreak extraordinary damage in our society.
But of course, we've seen the government actually encourage that. Back in the mid-1930s, they provided Social Security. And if you're over 65, even though you'd never paid it automatically. And I can remember, as a physician, the physicians were forced to enter Social Security. There were people who were 64 years of age. They paid in 1 year, and they got $1,000 a month for the rest of their lives. And after all, it was entitled to it. It was legal. And it almost as if it encourages this idea that you're entitled to something for nothing.
Well, you know, the entitlement crisis in America is the biggest crisis. It makes Enron and WorldCom and those others look like rounding errors. America is now $74 trillion in money that we have promised as gifts. People have put nothing into it or very little. There's your gifts of $74 trillion that have been promised, and there's not a single penny put aside to pay them. And the reason this happens is in democracies, and democracies, by the way, go through a natural phase toward collapse. They eventually collapse because the politicians compete with other politicians to get into office. The way they compete is by offering something for nothing. But each time they run again, they have to offer more than they offered last time, and their competitors try to up them like an auction. So now you find that all of the elections are people standing and offering free money. And free money triggers the thievery gene. People just too weak to resist free money.
Well, it's amazing. You know, we have a governor here in California named Arnold Schwarzenegger who just recently suggested spending $200 billion, borrowing $200 billion for massive building programs in this state, which will make everybody, most people, will be very, very prosperous, you know, because all that money being poured into the state for a construction of bridges and overpasses and highways, but no thought about who's ever going to pay it back.
Well, it's interesting. You remember the American Revolution was triggered by no taxes without representation. Well, now the movement to get rid of the death tax, where a person works all their life and saves the money and invests it carefully, and then the government takes 55% upon their death, the movement now is no taxation without respiration. And what we're saying is that every single penny that we're spending today in the form of deficits will have to be paid off by our children and by unborn children. So no taxation without respiration. In other words, the rule should simply be that you have no right to spend money and put the bills onto your children or to unborn children. They will have to work all their lives to pay it. The Comptroller General of the United States just came out with a study in Washington last week talking to them about this. It says the average working American owes $350,000 in entitlements to the government. Average American has $150,000 in bills to the government. That's how much that we owe on paper, and it can never be repaid. So we just move with hundreds of billions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and not a penny can ever be paid back. But that's what politicians have to offer to get votes, and then their competitors have to offer even more.
Somebody once said that, you know, we had a revolution because taxation of representation was bad, but look what happened when we do have representation. It's even worse. They've got us into such a pickle. We'll be back in just a moment here with Brian Tracy talking about his book, Something for Nothing. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Brian Tracy. His book is Something for Nothing. You write in your book about the ABC principle. What is that?
Well, what I found, and again, this is based on 2,000 years of historical research, is that A is the way people are. Sometimes I was talking about this, and people run from the room screaming, I can't stand it. As I say, look, there's seven qualities that all people have. These are human qualities, like they have eyes and ears and skin and so on. Number one is everybody is greedy. And people say, no, they're greedy because everybody prefers more to less. That's all. If I offer you $5 or $10 for the same thing, you prefer 10. That's the way human beings are. They prefer more to less. Second of all, I say everybody's lazy. Why? It's because people prefer an easier way rather than a harder way. If so, there's two ways to do something and the result is the same, people will do it the easiest way. Which, by the way, the desire to do things quickly, to get more and to do things quickly, is the drive of all modern technology, medicine, the entire electronic industry, is to try to find faster ways to get the same result that require less time, less energy. The third, I say, is everybody's ambitious because everybody wants to improve their place in life. That's normal and natural. You can't stop. Look at the Chinese. As soon as you take off the communist repression, the entire economy explodes into entrepreneurship. Everybody becomes lazy, greedy, and ambitious. I also say people are selfish. Well, what does that mean? It means that people think from their own point of view. You know, it's impossible for you to see the world except through your own eyes and feel hungry except through your own stomach. So everybody is selfish and that they're self-centered. I say the fifth thing is that everybody is vain. Is everybody is concerned about how they appear to other people. Finally, the last two are everybody is ignorant because nobody knows everything about anything. And finally, everyone's impatient because they want it quickly rather than slowly. So then we say, so everybody is lazy, greedy, ambitious, selfish, vain, ignorant, and impatient, including every single person who works for government or runs for office or even sells products or services. Everybody's the same. That's the A. The C is what people want, and everybody wants security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, power, and money. Those are the things, you can talk about them all day long, but these are family, health, long life, money. And money and power are the fastest way to get the things people want. The only question in any society is the B. How do people get from A, the people they are, to C, what everybody wants? And the answer is B. Now, if the way to get to B is through criminality, lying, deceit, murder, torture, like in the Middle East or in third world countries, then the very best and most talented people, the most ruthless and most unscrupulous people, will move into that position. That's been written about for 60 years now. Is why the worst always get on top. Why the worst get on top? If the very best way to get the things you want, like in America and in the free market countries, is by producing valuable goods and services that people want and need and are willing to pay for in competition with others who want the same customers, then there will be a tremendous drive or pressure in society to produce more and more good stuff at better quality at lower and lower prices, which is the sole reason for prosperity in America and in other prosperous countries.
And certainly, I think that the free enterprise system harvests this basic greed within people and makes them become productive. Because, you know, if they didn't have desire, they really wouldn't work.
That's
but
right.
People are rewarded for hard work. And that's really why our system works so much better than a socialist system, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Because a socialist system, there's still rewards, but the rewards are for manipulation, lying, coercion, payoffs, bribes. Socialist systems are essentially corrupt. There are no non-corrupt socialist systems.
All right, hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Brian Tracy, and he's talking about the ABC principle. And, of course, the A principle really has to do with the fact that we all really have a certain amount of desire for something. And C, of course, is the reward that we're going to get. And the B is how you get from A to C. And we're simply talking about how you have to harness individual incentive. You have to be a reward at the end. And under a socialist system, well, you can't get ahead because everything is controlled by the state, unless, of course, you're one of the bureaucrats. And, of course, you can live very well. But everybody else is enslaved. And as a result, they don't work very hard because they're not going to get rewarded. So pick up that story right there.
Okay. Well, you know, what we have is we have two philosophies of life. I call it the success philosophy, which is you reward successful people, and the failure philosophy, whereas you tax and punish and regulate successful people in order to give money to your friends to buy their votes. So that's basically, you know, the difference in political systems. Is one group is determined to work hard, make a good living, and contribute to society. The other two group is determined to take everything they possibly can away in the form of taxes, fees, regulations. And so what happens is if the socialist group dominates, the society just slips into impoverishment. In America, it's interesting today that you can tell the quality of a society by the level of entrepreneurship. And so the most booming, most prosperous economies that have the lowest unemployment, the highest rate of revenue to the government, the greatest levels of opportunity are the ones that have the most entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurs are the ones who are lazy, greedy, ambitious, selfish, vain, ignorant, and impatient, who, eager to improve their condition and get the things they want, find innovative ways to produce products and services that people want and need and are willing to pay for. And that's the basis of entrepreneurship. And so you find America is the most entrepreneurial country in the world. There are countries, for instance, Finland and Iceland are actually more entrepreneurial per capita, but they're very small. But in America, one out of every 12 Americans is working at a business startup. 71% of Americans dream of opening their own business. And every new business creates an average of 8 new jobs. So you can absolutely tell how prosperous society is or going to be by looking at what is called the number of new business formation. If their new business formation is 7 or 8% a year, and here it's 10, 12, then you can have credible prosperity and no unemployment. So in America, we have the most prosperous country in the world, the highest growing standards of living, highest levels of productivity, highest levels of net worth. The average American family has a net worth now of $105,000, the highest of any country in the history of the world. The average 70% of Americans own their own homes, the highest of any country in the world. Standard of living in America is higher than that of 25 other countries in the European Common Market. In fact, the average standard of living in the European Common Market is only equal to Louisiana and Mississippi, our two poorest states. So we have a great country here because there is so much encouragement for entrepreneurship.
Well,
for
I certainly agree with that. But on the other hand, we have this phenomenal debt that has been created. And you were pointing out earlier that even though, you know, people appear to be very, very wealthy, we are burdened with a debt. We'll either pay off ourselves, or we'll leave to our children, or we will simply have to write off, because there is no way in the world we're going to be able to come up with a 70 some trillion dollars of a debt, indentured servitude that we've created. In other words, what we've done is we've lived very well, we've prospered, but it's all built upon a debt system that will never be paid off. This is frightening, because it means that our children will have no future.
Well, exactly right. Unless people like you and I realize that we can't go on this way. You know, when they talk about cutting back on federal spending, and the head of the Republicans, God bless him, says there's no place to cut in a $2.6 trillion budget, most of which is pork, or much of which is pork, then you realize that the inmates have taken over the asylum in Washington. And I'm totally opposed to deficit spending. Deficit spending is basically a way of buying votes with money that you don't have and putting the bills onto our children.
One of the interesting things is the Republicans recently came up with a $39 billion cut over a 10-year period, which means they're going to cut about $3.9 billion a year, which is a fraction of the current budget that the president just presented.
We're dealing with is fraud at a high level. But here's the problem, and when we talk about big government conservatism and so on, what they have found is that the American public is now addicted to free money. The American public now believes that it's possible for them to get money they have not earned and don't deserve from government without ever having to pay it back. And so now it's just become like pigs in the trough.
And of course, my fear is they're going to destroy the whole financial structure of our society. And our job is to let people understand what, of course, is happening and to try to preserve whatever we can. But you destroy the financial system of a nation. You destroy the nation. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Brian Tracy. His book is Something for Nothing. And so what is the solution that you know, you see and I see both the same problem, but what can we do about it? How can we get people to quit taking money for nothing? After all, if we don't take it, somebody else is going to take it. It's sort of like, you know, that the hog fella, I just want to get to the trough before all the other hogs do.
Well, it's interesting. Someone has to stand up, and by the way, there are some honest politicians who refuse to ask for or accept any pork barrel projects for their constituencies. And one of them is it Mike Spence, one of the politicians from Oklahoma, the doctor, and he refuses absolutely to take pork, and he gets reelected with 60% or more of the vote every time. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, if you vote for me, I'm not bringing home any pork," and he sweeps the election. What we have to have is a revolution in politics where people say, stop. There's an economic law, it's called Stein's Law, and it says whatever can't go on, won't. And we're reaching a point now where it can't go on, so it won't. And what will happen is people like yourself and myself will start to say, hey, wait a minute, is that a something-for-nothing scheme? There used to be a congressman many years ago who served in Congress for 35 years, and whenever they brought up a spending scheme, he would stand up and he would say very loudly, raise his hand, Mr. Speaker, and then he'd say very loudly to the House, where's the money coming from? And initially people would say, well, and they'd debate it. After a while, they just laughed at him. In his final years in Congress, he would just stand up and he'd say, I would just have one question. These are all great schemes, free money schemes, but where's the money going to come from? And they just laughed him out of Congress. In 1974, in a budget reconciliation, no, I'm sorry, in 1965, under Lyndon B. Johnson, there used to be a rule that you had to match spending with taxation. And so they passed a new rule with Democratic Congress saying, no, you didn't. You could spend spending bills, but the Congress was not required to indicate where the money came from. Then the next thing they passed was all that money in the Social Security fund was supposed to be put away. Well, we just add those to general revenues and never pay them back at all. So they put in two pieces of legislation that have led to deficits every year for 40 years.
And I think really what the people don't understand is we have two national debts. We have one, that is the debt that we owe to other countries, and then we have the debt that we owe to ourselves. That's a Social Security debt. And of course, very, very soon, when the baby boomers begin to retire, there's no money there. And within a relatively few years, why the Social Security will be putting out far more than it's taking in. And we'll be back here in just a moment with our very special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Brian Tracy. His book is Something for Nothing. How can people get hold of your book, Brian?
Well, they can go to Amazon.com or they can come to BrianTracy.com and get it for 30% off. It's $16, $17. What it does is it arms you with the tools. It's been out for less than 3 months. It's already been used as a university textbook in two universities. It's been reviewed by some of the top reviewers in the country. It is a mind-changing book. You go to Amazon.com, come to BrianTracy.com. You can go to any bookstore and ask for it, Something for Nothing. It totally changes the way you see your world. It gives you a whole new perspective, and it deals with law, education, welfare, the United Nations, foreign affairs, politics, crime, gambling, family, teachers. It gives you a perspective on every single part of society that you never saw before. For the rest of your life, after you learn the Something for Nothing thesis, you see your world clearly for the first time.
Well, I thought it was so interesting that when President Bush gave his State of the Union message here about a week or so ago, he commented that by the year 2030, 60% of all the money that the government spent would be for Social Security and Medicare, and we'd only have 40% left over for everything else. So that was, I mean, and of course, we were either going to have to massively increase taxes, or we were going to have to begin cutting massively from what we're giving to those people retiring. And nobody wants to face up to the fact that we're in an impossible situation, having forgotten what Plato wrote in The Republic, where he said, democracy always descends into despotism. Yes. And it's doing that right here because, as you point out, people want something for nothing, and there just is no free lunch.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting. You take a country like Taiwan, Taiwan has a basic rule. We don't spend it if we don't have it. So Taiwan has a massive surplus. They have very high levels of prosperity, no unemployment, very great good reputation in the world for quality products, massive surpluses, and zero debt. In fact, the philosophy of the premier of Taiwan is that the job of the government is to make the people rich. The job of the government is to make the people rich. And so they're for 40 years, since or 50 years, they've been working to set up a system where the people can become rich because they have no debt. And so the Taiwanese are now enjoying one of the highest standards of living in the world. So can it be done? Of course it can be done. Taiwan has no natural resources. It's a bunch of people piled on a little island. In America, we have the ability, if we have the will and the leadership, to get control of our indebtedness and our entitlements. But without it, you're right. It's actually wished that 60%, we'd be close to 100% by 2040.
I think you're absolutely right. But then, George Bush didn't go to that point, but you're absolutely right. And it would simply mean that people would have to give about 60 to 80% of all the money they made just to fund the Social Security and Medicare. And then they'd have to pay their income tax out of the rest of it, and they wouldn't be getting anything left over. This is where we're really headed.
Well, in my book, Something for Nothing, I talk about intergenerational accounting, which is a school of accounting that looks at what it will cost in tax rates to fund entitlements when they come due. Okay? And what they work out is that a child born today with the entitlements that are on the books today, that's if they do not pass another giveaway program, free money program, for the next 50 years. In other words, not another program for 50 years. A child born today will pay 86% income tax for most of their life.
And those are frightening figures, and yet, knowing full well what was going to come down the line, George Bush passed the Medicare drug bill. I mean, this was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. You know, an extra $70 billion a year for the $700 billion over the next 10 years, money we don't have, and I think that's very conservative. It'll probably cost 10 times that much. So
Yes. Why
would you do that, knowing full well you're coming into a crisis, and then complain about the crisis that in large part is because of your own actions and the actions of the Democrat Party, pardon me, the Republican Party, passing legislation that the Democrats couldn't get through when they were in control?
Well, the challenge, and I explained to this in terms of politics, and politics, of course, is having the greatest influence. The expediency factor says that people seek the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want right now with no concern about secondary consequences. So a person decides to run for office. The first thing you find, and I've done this, the very first thing you find is other people want to run for office as well. So now suddenly it's a competition, like a market, and you have to raise money. The person who raises the most money usually wins the election. You know, God is on the side of the big battalions. So the one that raises the most money usually wins the election. So now you have to raise money. And you have to get out there and raise a lot of money. And $10 or $20 from your friends are fine, but you need thousands to run any kind of a political race. So finally, you win, okay? And you win by promising the people who give you money that you will do certain things if you get elected. Now, as we have, by the way, I was just at a political meeting the other day, and here the person running for office says, if you elect me, I will vote for a freeze in spending, I will vote for cutbacks, I will take no pork, I will vigorously work to get our debt under control. In other words, this is a person who will resist the something-for-nothing temptation in office, and based on his past career of integrity, you know that he will do it. Somebody else says, if you elect me, I'll get you all this free money. I'll raise the payments for the public sector workers, I'll raise the pensions, I'll build more roads. You know, with the $222 billion that Arnold Schwarzenegger is offering for construction in California, you know how much of that the government unions will get? About $222 billion. It is purely a payoff to the unions to get into office next time. He just literally bought the public sector.
And, you know, because he did it with borrowed money. And the thing is that the idea that you can actually just issue bonds and not worry about paying them off is madness. I couldn't believe during the last election that people voted $3 billion for embryonic stem cell research when every one of the studies show it doesn't work. Adult stem cells are wonderful, have a pluripotential capacity, and have been very effective. There is absolutely no justification for what they did, and yet the people of the state of California voted $3 billion. They're going to have to pay back. They're really going to have to pay back about $6 billion because they're going to have to pay interest on that. Where's the money going to come from?
Yep. And you're absolutely right. There is not a single example in the world of embryonic stem cell research alleviating any disease or illness.
And, of course, adult stem cell research, exciting.
Of course.
But anyway, I don't want to get off into that kind of worms. Incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Mr. Tracy, who really is a fascinating individual, apparently he's turned around a lot of companies. He's traveled throughout the world. He's put out videos with something, in 41 different languages.
Yes, 42 now.
42 different languages. Do you speak 42 languages?
No, I don't. I only speak about four.
All right, fine. Well, what about your website? Do you want to put out your website again?
Yeah, it's briantracy.com, BRIANTRACY.com. And it's a website dedicated to helping people to be far more effective, to earn more money, to use their time better. Because I personally believe that the better educated, the more knowledgeable you are, the better future you have. And so my whole goal has been to give people practical information they can use immediately to improve their businesses and their personal lives.
And, of course, you have to be willing to get in and work. You've got to put in extra time. You can't talk about putting in an eight-hour day and then going home.
Yeah, well, that's sort of a... See, people have been told they can have something for nothing. I have looked at successful people, and in America we have something like 6 to 8 million millionaires, almost all of whom are self-made in one generation. All of our richest people in America, by the way, the 10 richest billionaires in America, all started penniless at the beginning of their working careers, like Michael Dell and Bill Gates and Larry Ellison and the Paul Allen, the family of Sam Walton. They all started with nothing. So our richest people in America started with nothing. But see, then you look at the characteristics. What did they do to get there? 100% of them worked their heads off or something else off for about 20 years. They work 6-7 days a week for 20 years before they finally broke through. Everybody thinks, well, I can just work 9 to 5 and go home and watch TV and somehow I'll be successful. Oh, no. I'll go to one of those get-rich-quick seminars or buy a get-rich-quick product off the Internet or get a get-rich-quick book or something like that, and I'll get rich quick. In other words, I'll get free money. So people don't realize the hardest damn thing in the whole world is earning money in a competitive society. There's no easy money. There's no get-rich-quick. There's no ways to short-circuit the process. If you want to be financially successful, the average self-made millionaire in America takes 22 years from the time they get serious. Sometimes they don't start. Usually they don't start till they're in their 50s. Average self-made, their 30s. About 35 people start to get serious financially. The average self-made millionaire in America is 57 years old. It takes 22 years from the time you get serious. You're not going to beat the odds. You're not going to win the lottery. You're not going to win the jackpot at the casino. So, get your head out of wherever it's stuffed. And if you want to be financially successful, realize you're going to have to work much harder than financial failures. What is so hard about this to understand? I'm sorry. You still there?
Yes. Well, where do you see this something for nothing principle in world politics?
Well, we'll give you an example. The United Nations. The United Nations is a den of thieves. And people say, well, it's not really that serious. Yes, it is. It is one of the most corrupt organizations in the history of man on earth. You know why? It's because every single country has a vote. It's 194 countries represented. There's only a dozen rich ones. And all those countries that are not rich have carefully selected their best thieves and made them ambassadors and sent them to the United Nations with one goal, is to suck free money out of the richer countries by making them feel guilty for being rich. Now, nobody wants to put it that way, but it's exactly the way it is. And what they do is they sell their votes, and they go up and down the halls of the UN trying to suck money out of the rich countries. And then they take the money, and they steal it all. Africa, for example, I spent a lot of time in Africa. I was in Africa a few months ago speaking. You travel all over Africa. And Africa, the United Nations, said that they've given $450 billion to Africa to alleviate poverty. And then the finance minister of Nigeria said yes, but $400 billion of that was stolen. And the other $50 billion was flushed down the drain. Even countries like Nigeria, that's one of the biggest oil-producing countries in the world, seventh or eighth in the world, takes in tens of billions of dollars. All the money is stolen. never gets to anybody. The average income in Nigeria is a dollar a day. Even though literally oceans of money are pouring into Nigeria, they all go straight into the Swiss bank accounts of the very best thieves. The white or worst get on top.
I love that old adage that foreign aid is where you take money from the poor people in a rich country to give it to the rich people in a poor country.
Exactly. And all it is they try to make the successful countries, the free market systems, try to make them feel guilty, and they keep saying, well, you should give more to us. You should give more to us. Dick Cheney was at a conference of the developing nations, and he said, what can we do to help you? This is just 4 or 5 years ago when he was vice president. What can we do to help you? And they said, give us more money. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. We'll give you more money. Just give me the list of your Swiss bank account numbers, and we'll just send the money straight to your Swiss accounts so we just don't go through all the paperwork of sending it to your countries and having it go to the Swiss accounts. And they were all furious. He said, why are you so mad? He said, you're not supposed to say that. Of course, it's true. There's absolutely no denial of it. It's true. Yasser Arafat died worth $4.6 billion. Yasser Arafat, the reason Hamas was just elected in Palestine is because the Fatah under Yasser Arafat was the greatest thievery machine in the history of the world. They took in $1 billion a year from European and America, putting $290 million a year to help the poor Palestinians. It was all stolen. The Palestinians are eating dirt while their leaders are living in chateaus and palaces in Europe. They stole it all. And finally, they rose up, and the only alternative to Fatah was Hamas, so they elected a terrorist government. And now what the Europeans are saying? Well, you know, we may cut off your free money. Well, they're rioting in the streets because free money has destroyed the Middle East, but now, especially it's destroyed Palestine.
What can we do to organize America in such a way as to increase freedom, opportunity, prosperity, and personal growth for every American citizen?
Well, the first thing you understand is people have to realize there's no free money. And then if a person wants money, then what you have to say is, how are we going to make sure that your natural desire to get this money for nothing and channel it to your own interest is going to be thwarted? So you assume that every single person you talk to is going to try to cheat you out of free money, especially in foreign affairs. And then what you do is you say, all right, now how can we make sure this doesn't happen? And if we can't make sure it doesn't happen, then we won't do it. Now, George Bush has a wonderful idea. It's called the Opportunity Society. Is we will give the country money as long as they put in free market reforms, which means a legal system that works, which means eliminating corruption, bribery, theft, deceit, murder, rape, looting, and prisons. It means a property system that a person can own property. You know, in the Middle East, you know, nobody owns any property. Nobody owns any property. They have no property system in the Middle East. We have the torrent system in the United States, Canada, Britain, Russia, where right down to the inch of a piece of property in a city is clearly measured and specified. In the Middle East, nobody owns any property. Why? It's part of their culture. It means that no one is safe, because if somebody comes along and gets control of the government, they can take away your property. The only place in the Middle East where property is sacrosanct is in Israel, where people have property registered and so on.
Well, of course, the thing is, at one time, property was sacred here in America. It was something with the basic essence of our society. And now we see, here in America, that's being eroded away gradually with the Kelo decision and other decisions, as local communities say, well, we think we know what's better to do with your property than you do. And besides that, so-and-so, the developer, has given us a lot of money, and we think we want to expand the tax base, so we're going to take your country, we're going to take your property. So we're losing our property rights here in America.
Well, here's an interesting thing. You notice how the Democrats were screaming at Alito to swear that he would not overturn precedent. And Alito and Roberts, when they were being grilled, said that precedents are a very important thing to consider, but with new information, precedents, in other words, a previous judgment of the Supreme Court, can be examined. And they refused to sign in blood that they would not overturn precedents. One of the precedents that the left does not want overturned is this removal of eminent domain in the Kelo case. But my prediction is that within 5 years, another case will make itself to the Supreme Court, and the justices, now that we have conservatives who believe in property rights and the Constitution, will overturn it. And they will say this was a bad decision, because you had, unfortunately, had too many people on the left, on the Supreme Court, we thought it was a dandy idea to be able to arbitrarily take people's property away. And that will be overturned.
Well, I hope and pray that you're right. I really do.
Just, you and I and everybody else are just too angry about it. Even the politicians, in state by state, are rushing to pass laws to make sure that the Kyoto decision can't be enacted in their state.
Well, I think that we need, of course, to hold the fire to the feet of our politicians to pass laws that say eminent domain cannot supersede property rights. Brian, thank you so very much for being with us. It's the second time. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That was Brian Tracy, his book, Something for Nothing. We'll be back in here in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I really believe that what Brian says is absolutely right. We have a real problem here in America because we've lost our vision. Our freedom was originally based upon God's law. God gave us our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, of course, those terms really came from the writings of John Locke, who had used the term life, liberty, and property. And, of course, every time you see in the Constitution the words life and liberty, it's always associated with the word property. Property and property rights are the very essence of a free society. And if you can't own property, if it really belongs to the government, if the government can come in and regulate your property, then you are no longer a free man. And what people in America really don't understand is that there are people who really have a different world vision. There are people who really want to control. There are evil and wicked people, and you can do the most good if you can control the reins of government. And so they work in government, and they work in concert, and they plant their people in places where they can vote, they can actually count the votes. And I hate to say this, but many of our elections in the United States are rigged today. Now, the mafia always used to rig them. And, of course, the old adage in Chicago was vote early and vote often. There's no question that the mafia rigged the vote to get Jack Kennedy elected back in 1960. And certainly it was not only in Chicago, Illinois, but in several other states. But this sort of thing continues going on today. And we talk about democracy and the importance of the integrity of the vote, and yet in Ohio was the only state of the Union in the election in 2004 where the exit polls did not match with the official vote. In every other state, exit polls matched the vote. In Ohio, why, of course, John Kerry won the election, except the number of votes was overwhelmingly or slightly more for Bush. In fact, it was the man who controlled the voting machines who was the chairman of the Bush for President Committee, and at least in one precinct, with 800 voters, there were 4,000 votes for George Bush. And the explanation was, the voting machine had a hiccup. It was not one voting machine, it was many of them. Actually, there have been indictments and people have gone to prison in Ohio for voter fraud, and you have not heard a word about it in the rest of the country, because, unfortunately, why we have lost our concepts of representative government, what we need to do is get back to paper ballots. At least we have a trail. The reason they're bringing in the electronic machines is so that your vote will never be able to count again. It's not how the vote count that's important, but who actually counts the votes that determines who's elected. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us. This 5 hours a day, we reach out on over 60 outlets every week, satellite, internet, and various outlets to try to bring people the truth. And we put together an effective little network, and certainly many of our programs are rebroadcast on major networks, and our evening program is heard on over 30 stations. But it's an expensive proposition, and so if you're out there and you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle, and behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces which are aimed at destroying America. If you believe either we stand to lose this country, unless we can convince the American people of what's going on, then we hope that many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. It will give you an overview of what's going on, and we hope very soon, for those of you who will purchase the DVDs, we should have them very, very soon. But you can get the book right now by itself or with a video, and the audio tape is the Brotherhood of Darkness special. It will give you an overview of the secret societies that are really there, that rule the world. And behind these secret societies are powerful spiritual forces. There really is another dimension. There are people who are in contact with that other dimension. It is a spiritual dimension that you don't want anything to do with, but it is there, it is real, and that many of our leaders, or some of our leaders, are in contact or under the control of that other dimension. So, and if you'd like, of course, to verify what I'm talking about, let me suggest you get our three pamphlets. They're called the Occult Hierarchy, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, and I simply quote from the writings of people who are involved in the other dimension. And they openly admit to being involved with the Great White Brotherhood, the Ancients of Wisdom, the Great Masters, these demonic spirits, which are here in the world today. We carry a book called Spiritual Warfare, another one, The Gods That Walk Among Us. We carry Wayne Peterson's book, Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Beings. He's been in contact with these extraordinary beings. He was formerly in charge of the Fulbright scholarships here in the United States. He talks about some of the world leaders he's been in contact with and their dedication to the dark side. Unusual, fascinating books. We carry the books by Manly P. Hall, who was able to materialize and dematerialize. Manly P. Hall was a Satanist, and he wrote The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, The Secret Destiny of America. Now, the latest book we're carrying of his, What the Ancients' Wisdom Expects of Its Disciples. You need to read what the other side is saying. Understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Please go to our website at www.radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there on the internet 5 hours a day directly, or linking to the other programs. You can get the frequencies for our shortwave broadcast, for our satellite. You can listen 9 hours a day on Telstar 5. Of course, you won't get anything accomplished, but we've put together a little network with good sound Christian programming at Telstar 5, available 24 hours a day. You've got to help us to get other stations to pull down our programs, to get other people to listen, to understand what we're really up against. So, again, our webpage, radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, going into what's really going on in Iraq, how the Iraqis had offered to surrender, how Saddam Hussein had offered to go into exile. Well, if those things happened, why doesn't every American know? The reason you don't know is because the media is controlled. If you don't believe, you need to get the book, The New Media Monopoly, which we carry, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.